In the early hours of December 3rd, 1984, an explosion at a pesticide factory in Bhopal, India, emitted tons of poisonous gas into the air, which eventually killed over 20,000 people. There are reports of birth defects in the town even today, 25 years after the accident. This week, a verdict was handed down in the only criminal case connected to the disaster. And joining me now to explain why so many people are unsatisfied with it is Mark Hertzgaard. He's an environmental correspondent for The Nation and a fellow at the Open Society Institute. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show for this backstory segment. Hi.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for addressing this topic.
The sentence in the Union Carbide case was delivered on Monday. 8 former Union Carbide officials were convicted of death by negligence, and each got 2-year prison terms and were fined about $2,100 each. Why was the penalty that light?
That's a penalty roughly equivalent to what you would get for a traffic accident in India. And very good question why the penalty is that light. That's what a lot of the victims of the disaster have been asking. And they're very dissatisfied not only with the Indian government, because it's taken so long to get this case through the courts, but also with the United States government, which has done all it could to drag its feet on this. And needless to say, they're very disappointed with Union Carbide and with its current owner, Dow Chemical, which has essentially, they were named absconders from justice because they simply refused to stand trial.
One of the accused died in the interim, didn't he?
One of the 8 is actually deceased, and those 8 individuals were all officials of the Union Carbide Indian subsidiary, including the chairman of that subsidiary. So the higher-ups of the Indian subsidiary are taking the rap for this terrible, terrible accident, but not a single U.S. official has been charged. And in particular, activists wanted to see Warren Anderson, who was the CEO of Union Carbide at the time of the disaster, and who apparently signed off on a number of the cost-cutting and safety measures that went wrong in Bhopal. And he's living in retirement now in Florida and has been shielded by the United States government. The Indian government tried to extradite Anderson to India for to stand trial, and the State Department denied.
Well, if there were cost-cutting measures that led to this, isn't that negligence? the alternative, of course, would have been to charge them with culpable homicide. Had prosecutors even considered that?
They did consider that, and there were actions taken in previous years to charge them with the culpable homicide, as you say, which, of course, would have carried much stiffer penalties, both financial and in terms of jail time. But over time, the Indian court system whittled that back. We've gotten some reports from India in recent days saying that the CBI, which is their equivalent to the FBI here in the United States, that they were ordered by the Indian authorities to protect Carbide and to reduce these sentences and to drag their feet on the proceedings, which is why it's taken 25 years even to get this verdict.
Well, there was a ruling in 1996 by India's Supreme Court that these 8 officials couldn't be tried for culpable homicide. Wasn't there an outcry at that time?
There have been so many outcries. I've been following this story for about 15 years now, and the ups and downs of the legal process, they're bewildering, to put it frankly. And you're quite right, that did happen in 96. There was an outcry. They went back, the plaintiffs in 2002 and 2004, to push the case again. And it's really only because of the plaintiffs' determination to see justice in this case that we finally have even these insufficient verdicts.
How much gas was emitted after the explosion at the Union Carbide pesticide factory?
Well, that's a good question, and this is one of the areas where I see so many really downright eerie parallels to what's happening now with the BP disaster in the Gulf. At the time of the accident, Union Carbide's officials said, this is not a dangerous gas, it's not poisonous, it's only a tear gas. They lied about how much was actually being emitted. Now, perhaps they didn't know exactly, but they said it was small amounts. We now know from independent investigators that there was about, I believe, 27 tons of the gas, methyl isocyanate, was released. And the scenes that night, it was absolute apocalypse. People who breathed this in the industrial town of Bhopal began to retch uncontrollably. They were splayed on the ground. They lost control of their bowels. Many people were killed instantly. And, of course, as you mentioned in your intro, there's still 100,000 people at least today who are suffering from grotesque birth deformities, fingers growing out of shoulders and all of this. Why? Because the water supply still remains contaminated there, and neither the government nor the Dow Chemical, which bought Union Carbide in 2001, they haven't stepped up to the plate and paid for these damages. And I think we see, again, these very same parallels in the Gulf of Mexico now, with corporations who say one thing at the time, consistently downplay the horror that's unfolding, and do all they can to escape punishment.
My guest is Mark Hertzgaard, environmental correspondent for The Nation and a fellow at the Open Society Institute. We're talking about the recent verdict in the Bhopal disaster as part of our backstory series. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, there were people who came in contact with the gas at the time and lived in the same sort of thing that we see with Hiroshima. Some of them must have just come through it okay. Do we have any idea of why some people are less affected than others?
We do not have a very good idea of that. One of the people I wrote about in my story at The Nation was a woman named Rashida B. She's one of the leading activists now. She was 28 at the time of the disaster, and she lost 7 family members in that disaster. She herself, now she's in her mid-50s now, and she herself is not, one would not say she is well. I have met her. She looks at least 10 years older than she is, but she didn't do as badly as her husband and 6 other members of her family, some of whom died, some of whom were basically incapacitated. So I'm afraid I don't have a good answer for that, except probably some ingested more of the gas than others. Others probably had weaker immune systems. And then, of course, in the years since, it probably depends on how much water you've drunk and various other factors.
The Indian law minister is among those who've spoken out against the verdict. How have the Indian populace seen the role of the judiciary in this case?
From what I've seen, and I haven't been to India this week to judge it for myself, but just from reading the press coverage, there's 2 reactions. One is fury at the perceived lightness of the sentencing, and that fury is directed not just at the judiciary and the government, but again also at Union Carbide and Dow Chemical. But second, the other feeling is that it's very well known in India that their court system is a very long-winded, drawn-out process, especially if one or more of the parties to the case has enough money to continually appeal. Now, that happens in the United States, too, but not to this extent. This is 25 years later, after the worst environmental disaster in history, worse than Chernobyl, killed 22,000 people at least. And it took all this time to get even this small measure of justice, as the Indian activists that I've seen quoted, and also Amnesty International has said, justice deferred is justice denied. And this is 25 years later. A lot of the people, you mentioned one of the defendants has died. A lot of the people who were waiting for justice in this case, the victims, they've died as well.
Now, Dow denies any culpability because it wasn't the owner at the time. It bought Union Carbide and claims that there was an agreement not long, a certain amount of money paid after the accident, and that settled the whole problem, wasn't it? Union Carbide paid $470 million to the Indian government to settle all claims in the accident.
That's correct, $470 million. There's 2 problems with that. One is that the $470 million was based on an estimate of a death toll of 3,000, We now know that that was grossly underestimated, that seven times more people died, so the numbers should be seven times larger. And second, the arrangement, the deal was made between Union Carbide and the Indian government, not between Union Carbide and the victims. And the victims all say, that's not sufficient. We didn't agree to this, and we expect real justice in this. The other thing that Dow Chemical has said is that, look, we bought Union Carbide. We didn't buy their liabilities. This is an almost laughable legal theory. Since when can a corporation buy another corporation's assets but not the liabilities? That would be laughed out of any court in the United States.
Haven't Union Carbide and Dow Chemical claimed that the accident was the result of sabotage?
They have indeed. And again, this is another parallel that I see to the BP situation. We have a documentation that Warren Anderson, the former CEO, signed off on cost-cutting measures that his own officials, his own safety engineers, were saying this could cause accidents. He signed off on it. The local Indian Union Carbide officials signed off on it. They did not even have an emergency system in place in case there was an accident. Does that sound familiar to anybody from who's been following the Gulf coverage? And this is what you see over and over again. It's in the nature of a corporation that tries to maximize profits that they're going to be tempted to cut costs. And that's why you've got to have tough government regulation. I see in the British press today that the British government is beginning to say, hey, don't be so tough on BP. We've got a lot of our pensioners who are wrapped up, have their investments in BP, and don't you, you know, President Obama is talking about how BP should not be paying their dividends out to shareholders. And, you know, again, this is a very peculiar view of corporate responsibility, that somehow when a corporation is responsible for such a horrific disaster, that somehow they shouldn't have to pay for it. The only way that we're going to prevent these disasters going forward is if corporations know that they will take a huge financial hit if they cut these corners on cost.
Did the U.S. State Department ever explain why it denied the extradition request for Warren Anderson in 2004?
They have not explained that. Perhaps they know internally, but there's never been a public explanation. At the time, I called them and asked for an explanation, and they just said, we have nothing more to add.
So the victims and their families did receive some compensation, didn't they?
Some of the victims and some of the families, yes.
And what's the situation now? Are they likely to appeal this week's verdict?
You know, there's enormous anger there. They feel like this verdict is not enough. But in terms of where they're going to go now, I have not heard a definitive view. They say we're going to keep fighting, we're going to keep pushing for justice. But exactly what that means in terms of appeals, you know, it's the court system in India. Whatever happens, it's going to be a long, drawn-out process.
Well, it sounds to me like Union Carbide is culpable, but so is the Indian government for lax supervision, lax regulation. And as you suggest, a real cleanup of the environment hasn't been done, and then we're talking 25 years later.
25 years later, and the water supply there is still horrifically, horrifically polluted. You know, women can't get pregnant. They're having trouble getting husbands because they don't start menstruating. It's really an ongoing disaster. There's attempts on the ground. There's some very heartening efforts to on the part of non-governmental organizations to bring some balm and comfort. But, you know, there's no substitute for money in these situations. This is a major disaster, and it's going to take major sums of money to remediate that water supply, the underground water supply, get all that garbage out. The plant itself has been closed, so that's a good thing. But beyond that, not much has happened.
Did the disaster in Bhopal change the Indian government's regulation of chemical plants?
I wouldn't go that far, but I would say that it helped to shift the view of the Indian public and to some extent the government about the role of environmental regulation. The irony here is that India actually has some of the toughest environmental laws in the world. And they've got some very crusading lawyers there who've written into the Indian Constitution the right to a safe environment. So, again, this is another lesson with the BP scandal. You can have very good laws. The United States has some of the best environmental laws in the world, but you've got to have government regulators who enforce those laws before you have disasters so that you don't have the disasters occur.
Mark Hertzgaard, go ahead, finish.
I was finished.
Oh, well, then I want to thank you so much for talking with us today on Backstory. We've been talking about the verdict in the Bhopal case earlier this week, a verdict that many people felt was not even a slap on the wrist. Mark Hertzgaard is environmental correspondent for The Nation and a fellow at the Open Society Institute. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you again for focusing some attention on this very important issue.